sea. Land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty. Sweet liberty. Part of the plan. Or is it a state of mine? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Well, kind of. You don't get Jackie tonight. Well, you do, but you don't. How you doing, folks? Jeff Bennett filling in for Jackie Patru, who happens to be our guest tonight. You're listening to another hour of Sweet Liberty right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, also on the satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, 7.70 audio. By the way, you can also pick the program up over at SweetLiberty.org if you care to do so. And as always on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio, 5.07 megahertz on your shortwave dial. Get some dipole antennas on those shortwaves, will you? Stop complaining about how poor the signal is. It's your antenna. Well, in most cases. How are you tonight, Jackie?
I'm fine, Jeff. What is a dipole antenna?
What that basically is, it's going to be two fairly lengthy strands of copper wire. And what they do is they connect. Sometimes they wrap around an existing antenna. Sometimes the individual shortwaves have a plug-in mechanism. A dipole basically takes the two wires out and then splits them off into a T. And if they will run about, oh, let's just say roughly 95 feet of copper wire underneath their house, they will be underneath the eaves, the overhang of their house.
Yeah.
They'll be amazed at the difference in the signal strength.
From the radio, yeah.
From the radio, exactly.
So it would have to go like out a window.
Out a window, drill a hole in the wall, whatever the case
may be. Uh-huh, and then up and then under the eaves.
Under the eaves.
Well, I'll tell you what,
job.
Thank you for that, because, you know, I talk to some people who just say they get the broadcast really strong, and there's so many people who have a problem bringing it in, and maybe that's what's missing.
Well, it's interesting. We had that last night, and a lot of folks in the chat room, which, by the way, my chat room is open tonight if you care to come in, www.federalobserver.com. And okay, we've got to have a smarty pants in the chat room that says, uh-oh, Jackie had a sex change. Obviously, that's because I'm talking and you're not. Most of the folks in the chat room said signal was very clear last night. Now, someone who came into the chat room earlier tonight said that it had been very poor. Well, obviously, there's a lot of different things involved. I mean, you know, don't bother going to Salt Lake City, because the signal just bounces right up over that whole valley, and nobody can hear it up there. Although I do have a few listeners up in Utah, they're certainly not in the Salt Lake City area. Antenna is a big problem with short waves, and a lot of folks just don't understand it. I'm not sure that tiny tenna is the answer. I know there's a guy that's been promoting that for a lot of years.
What's it called?
Tiny tenna. And that has had some pretty good reviews, but I think a lot of it is geographics. You know, if you're living in the mountains and you've got a lot of trees around you, maybe weather activity in particular areas, all of these things can have an effect. But one guy says, only problem with a long wire is you get everything, including noise.
Okay.
I think it depends on how you set it up, because
okay.
I've had some long talks with radio engineers that have long emphasized this business about a dipole. It can make a big difference. That's why it's got to go up and then into a T. Don't just take it out and kind of hang it out there and loop it.
A dipole is two pieces?
Mm-hmm.
Separate pieces.
Two pieces, and then you know, they're basically going to go kind of up the wall.
In
together.
Other words, do they split apart?
Yeah, they'll split apart.
But they stay single at the radio.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, and Radio Shack.
And do you
is,
take them out two different directions under your eaves?
Exactly.
Oh,
and Radio
wow.
Shack can be very helpful. One of the guys saying get one of the little Radio Shack amplifiers. He says doesn't work really well as an amplifier, but works as a filter. We could probably do a whole program on how to get better sound.
Well, you know what? Maybe one day we'll do this, and maybe one day not too in the too distant future.
Yeah, but I think it would be wise for us to get somebody, I mean, I'm only sharing some of the things that I've heard over the years that the radio engineers have shared with me. I think it would be wise if we got a guy to come on who really knows.
Well, if you know somebody.
Has all the expertise, and I'll get somebody hooked up with you, because I think it would
great.
Be well worth it.
That's great.
James is saying a good ground is also 50% of good reception.
And how do you ground?
I'm going to have to see if James can send me some information over. How do you ground it, James? You just, you know, run a metal rod into the ground? I mean, that could well be it.
Like a lightning rod?
Sure. That could maybe while you're
from your radio.
I'm not sure. I will have to find out.
Oh, I know. Maybe you could connect your radio to something that's on your house that's in the ground.
Possible.
Maybe.
We'll get. I don't want to try to second guess this. We'll get some answers from
some
folks who have the answers, and that's the best way to share it with the audience, because that has always been one of the biggest problems that you and I have dealt with in shortwave over the years is reception.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the excuse is always out there that it's always solar activity. I don't buy it.
Well, no, because you know this past week, Monday and Tuesday was not good at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that there had been solar flares. And then somebody else said, yeah, but 3.210 is crystal clear. And if that's so, if it is solar flares, you'd think that it would interfere with 3.210 off also.
Well, except that I'm not sure that I agree with that story, because I remember that you used to be on 3.210.
I know, honey, but it cleared up after I left.
Exactly. About one day after you left.
The very Monday that I, the Monday, August 18th, I believe, that I started on 5070.
Right.
That same evening, next day, I was getting calls from people saying, my God, you ought to hear 3.210.
Yeah, it's no surprise. James in the chat room is saying he ran a ground wire down to the copper pipes below his house, and he found that added a better ground and actually gave him better reception. So there's things that can be tried. I mean, shortwave is not a perfect science,
mm-hmm.
and it does take some experimentation to improve signal, but if we can do it, why not?
Just
go for whatever is going to increase strength. I want to take the beginning portion of this program and do something. We're going to kind of continue on with some of the discussion we had last night, but I always find it interesting. There's people that have told me that over the years that I tend to make things a little too difficult for people to understand on the shortwave.
Gosh, I don't know. I was fascinated with what you, and I realized that a lot of what you were talking about last night is in that pamphlet that you emailed.
It is.
And so I hope that our listeners are ordering that pamphlet, but I was fascinated with some of the information.
Well, thank you. I try to keep it simple and to the point. Obviously, it is written for people who have some understanding of gold and silver, maybe some people who have bought. There's probably areas in that pamphlet that I did not cover that I probably should have covered, and I have not gone to print with it yet. I can print these out here in my office right now to go ahead and mail out, but
uh-huh.
I want to do some final reviewing on it. But and so we did try to keep things simple. I'm still having a difficult time talking, so bear with me. I've been, as you well know, groggy for several days.
Yes.
I came across a column that I found interesting because it talks about economics and the death of American jobs in probably one of the simplest the forms that I could find. A lot of times I'll share with the audience some of the writings of Gary North and Bill Bonner, the guys over at Daily Reckoning, and some of their stuff is good, some of it I don't care for, and it's too cutesy-chatsy, but some of the stuff is very well done. And over the course of the last week, I've been talking a lot about this massive housing bubble that we are facing in this country. And I doubt time will allow it tonight, but a very good friend of mine wrote a column 2 years ago that I was just rereading yesterday, and it blew me away. Now, it happens to deal with real estate problems taking place in Arizona, or what he envisioned, but he also envisions this happening all over the country. Interesting, considering he did write it 2 years ago.
When you're talking about real estate bubble,
are
you talking about the artificial inflation of the value of the homes?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and,
because
and how it's all going to implode.
So they can tax us on a higher value.
Oh, that's
and
the
you'd
one.
Never be able to sell your home for what they're valuing it.
Of course not. And this, I shared with an audience. I was out in Chicago earlier in the week, and I said, look, you know, I've been in this house a little over a year and a half, and just shy of a year and a half, we had the house reappraised for a combination of some tax reasons and other things we were doing. And all of a sudden, we found that the home was appraised at $100,000 higher than we paid for it. Roughly, actually, we didn't even close on this house till like October of 03.
Oh, wow.
We had the house reappraised a year later, and it was up $100,000. Well, every city and state and village in this country is complaining that they don't have any money. And so how do they do it? They raise taxes, and that real estate's the easiest way to do it.
Well, you know, this is exactly what happened to the farmers back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
They artificially inflated the value of land. They urged, they encouraged the farmers to buy or to borrow, you know, which they do against their upcoming crop,
mm-hmm.
if they need a new piece of equipment. And they allowed them to borrow a humongous percentage of quote, the value of their land.
Absolutely.
Okay, then they had these high mortgages. And then what they did, Jeff, is they devalued the land. And the land was not worth anywhere near what they had a mortgage for, and then the bank called in the mortgages.
Well, of course, but sometimes that is, should we call it conspiratorial?
Well, right.
Because
and
usually
so,
the guy
so
that winds up with the property is a buddy of the bank.
That's right.
You know?
But so what is happening today is conspiratorial.
Of course, I
would not doubt one bit after they have done this for a while if they won't do the same thing, because thousands of farmers, you know, they had sale after sale after sale in the 70s of these farms because the banks were calling in the loans and their property wouldn't cover it.
No, not at all. Part of the thing we're dealing with today, though, is we've had this massive housing bubble, and I liken a bubble to a balloon.
Yeah,
let's say you're going to have the grandkids over for the birthday, and good old Grandma Jackie gets to start blowing up balloons. And as you get this balloon bigger, your grandbabies are saying, bigger, Grandma, bigger, come on, bigger, Grandma. Well, eventually that balloon can't hold anymore. It's going to explode. And that's exactly what's happening here. The economy in this country is being driven falsely by this housing bubble.
Yeah.
And it is,
and yet I
don't really want to get into the housing bubble so much tonight. Because this other piece, number one, it becomes somewhat time sensitive. It happens to come out of the most recent edition of the American Free Press, the former Spotlight. And a lot of the stuff in there I have problems
mm-hmm.
with, but other stuff I found interesting. And this particular column by James Tucker just hit the whole damn thing so simple, right on the head. He says, American import quotas on textiles expired with the new year, causing the death of many American jobs, while enlarging the huge trade deficit and strengthening China both economically and militarily. The same economic forces that have drained jobs under NAFTA are at work again, as international conglomerates that became rich in this country now put profits over patriotism. Textiles and other products produced in the United States, where minimum wage laws are imposed, will now be made by slave wage workers in China and other countries. In those countries, the companies escape the burden of benefits such as vacation pay, health insurance, and paid vacations, nor do they have to meet clean air standards. Americans who still have good jobs will buy these imported products at low prices. Those left unemployed or underemployed because their jobs have been exported will be unable to afford those cheap products. And that's what I've been saying for a long time. Folks, you want to keep on supporting Walmart, you're going to put yourself right out of a job, and one day you won't even be able to afford to go shopping at Walmart. And to try to get folks to understand that. So the column goes on to say, mills that make fabric and thread and companies that cut and sew clothing have been forced to reduce jobs by more than half in the past decade, to 685,600 last November, from nearly 1.6 million in 1994. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Would you read that one again?
685,600 people employed in the mills and the textile industry in this country this past November. But in November of 1994, it had been 1.6 million.
Oh, my God.
So that's a hefty drop. World Trade Organization estimates that the end of quotas will result in China capturing 50% of the U.S. clothing market, up from 16%. China to have 50% of the clothing market in the United States. What the hell's wrong with people in this country? One of the strongest voices in Congress for...
You know, Ron Paul is a good one. You know, Ron Paul is adored by many people because he keeps introducing look-good bills in the U.S. Congress that it's okay. They let him do it, or you know, otherwise he'd be in prison like Jim Trafficant.
I know.
But it's, he's a shill. And
I know
this man, on, I think he was on Bill Brumbaugh or one of those one night, not maybe, whatever, but he was a listener called in and said, it was talking about that, you know, you can't find anything anymore that isn't made in China. He said, well, I believe that the people in America ought to have the opportunity to buy lower price goods if they can get them, and regardless of where. And he said, what about the jobs? What about the jobs that are being lost? Ron Paul is a open trader.
I know.
And he is a traitor. And
in
I hope our listeners heard this.
Listen, you know, I don't object to your saying that. Several years ago, when Bush introduced this guest worker program amnesty combination thing,
he voted for it.
Ron Paul voted
for
it.
Yes, he did.
I was on the phone with his office that morning saying, look, I got a lot of my listeners that are ticked off. They want to know. They can't understand why Ron Paul voted that way. The comment that was made to me by his so-called media guy was that, well, you know, Congressman Paul, you know, voted based upon information that the general public doesn't have access to. So, well, maybe he'd like to come on the air and explain what that information is his position. And I let him know that, look, I'll make myself available to Congressman Paul to pre-record an interview if that's more convenient for him. Hey, that sounds great. I'll get back to you in 2 hours. It's 2.5 years later.
Sure.
I'm still waiting for the guy's call.
Well,
I ain't holding my breath.
The same thing. I had one of our listeners when I was talking about how Ron Paul always voted for most favored nation status.
For China,
for communist China.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our listeners who lived in Texas asked if I would call Paul's office to find out what they say about it. You know what they said? Well, he's for less government. And if we have tariffs at our borders, it's just going to give the government more money to give it more power. I said, come on, give me a break. Does he think we're all brain dead out here? When the Congress wants money, they print more money and then borrow it from the Federal Reserve.
I know.
But this was his explanation as to why Ron Paul opened the doors, helped to open the doors.
I don't know if Ron Paul is being handled and manipulated.
Let me tell you something. It isn't because
office.
He doesn't know, Jeff. I know this because, and I'm so sorry I can't remember this guy's name,
right,
from Colorado. They worked with Ron Paul on the economy, on, you know, the Federal Reserve, all of this stuff. He was being literally tutored. He absolutely knows what the heck he's doing. And I if I didn't know this, I would maybe, you know, agree with you that, well, he just...
No, I'm just asking, because I...
Well, they're all handled, honey.
Oh, I know they are.
For God's sake, the Hill Rats up there, those are the people that are really writing the bills or, you know, tweaking them,
well, sure,
et cetera.
The fact of the matter is that if Ron Paul was not playing ball with the big boys up there, kid yourself, he'd be out of office.
That's right.
He wouldn't still be there.
And by the way, I got an advertisement. I'm getting us off track. I don't mean to. But I got an advertisement today for some kind of a rally that's coming up.
Which
and,
rally is this?
Well, it's, what the heck, it's that law thing. Clay Douglas is going to be there. Ron Paul is going to be there. What's his name? We the People. The guy from New York.
Oh, I can't think of his name right now.
Well, Schultz. Bob Schultz?
Right.
He's a Rockefeller boy.
Yeah.
And it's on our website, by the way, in Sweet Liberty, in the Wolves and Sheep's Clothing section,
mm-hmm,
about Bob Schultz. I had an experience with him back in 1993. And in 1997, he was promoting the New York State ConCon, and he had spent years networking county by county, all county taxpayers association. They did a lot of good stuff. He got a lot of people to trust in him, and then said, we need to have this constitutional convention. Well, guess where it was coming from? The Rockefeller corner.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm done. I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
Well, I'm dragging us off track here.
No, I don't think it's a big problem. I think that there's times going off in different tracks is worth it, because it's all... I hope that what it shows the audience is the absolute ties that bind, how it's all intertwined and designed to destroy this country. You know, years ago, everybody laughed, oh, there's no way, we'll never be brought down to third world status. What the hell have they brought us down to?
That's right.
And yet they have this big pomp and circumstance in D.C. today, and somebody sent me an email, and their comment was what they were appalled about is the entire parade route was almost devoid of people. And so this was all for television. You
got to
see
a call
the nice
from,
parade.
Uh-huh. Well, are you,
no people.
Oh, where was this, honey?
In D.C. with the inauguration today.
I got a call from one of our listeners who is a chauffeur driver in New York. And he called me up. He said they've got some big deal going at the CFR headquarters. And he said, I have never seen this before. But he said they have police cars literally backed up against the building, facing out across, you know, there were four or six of them, I don't remember. He said, I have never seen anything like this before. But he said they're ready for anything.
Why would there be a big CFR meeting, if there in fact was, on Inauguration Day?
I don't know, but some, I don't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but
very
anyway, George was really, you know, hyper about this. He said, I've just never seen this before.
That's unusual,
uh-huh.
Very unusual. Let's go back to this thing.
I'll be back in a second.
You go ahead. I want to go back on track with this business about the textile quotas and the death of U.S. jobs. As one of the strongest voices in Congress for preserving American jobs belongs to Representative Bernie Sanders, an independent from Vermont, a left-wing populist. It's no secret the U.S. middle class is shrinking, poverty is increasing, and the gap between rich and poor is widening, Sanders said. The primary reason is pretty straightforward. Over the last 3 years, get this, over the last 3 years, we have lost, I got to find the next part of this thing now here, come on, where is it? Come on, you told me, page three. Over the last 3 years, we have lost 2.7 million decent-paying manufacturing jobs, more than 16% of the sector. Good-paying manufacturing jobs were moved abroad, with millions going to totalitarian China. In industry after industry, Sanders continues, including furniture, apparel, footwear, auto parts, textiles, toys, bicycles, telephones, patriotic CEOs have closed shop and headed overseas. INA, whatever that is, or in a harsh... No, I'm sorry, this is the way they typed it in the book. It's crazy. In a harsh attack on the lack of patriotism among international firms based in the United States, Sanders quoted them. John Chambers, CEO of Cisco, said, China will become the IT center of the world, and we can have a healthy discussion about whether that's 2020 or 2040. What we're trying to do is outline an entire strategy of becoming a Chinese company. Sanders pointed out that this corporate turncoat received billions of dollars in corporate welfare from American taxpayers. Next, Sanders quotes Jeffrey Immelt, CEO of General Electric, who says, when I'm talking to GE managers, I talk China, 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 China. You need to be there. Outsourcing from China is going to grow to $5 billion. Every discussion today must center on China. The cost basis is extremely attractive. Sanders then quotes a senior VP at Microsoft who says, it's definitely a cultural change to use foreign workers, but if I can save a dollar, hallelujah. Bill Gates, head of Microsoft, was recruited into Bilderberg last spring at Stresa, Italy. And while Microsoft is saving a dollar, it is helping undermine our economic and military security by gutting our manufacturing and technological infrastructure and moving it lock, stock, and barrel to one of our major international rivals. The time for playing nice with corporate turncoats and their enablers in government is over, Sanders has said. You know, here's the problem. So Sanders can make the statement all he wants. And unfortunately, it gets published in something like the American Free Press, which few people in this country read. That kind of information will never get posted in the mainstream newspapers. It'll certainly never go in the New York Times, the New York Post, Washington Post. It'll never be on the big three news networks at night. They skirt around it. Lou Dobbs over at Moneyline on CNN is the only one that steps outside the box and actually discusses at length the problems with illegal immigration in this country. But that's as far as it goes. The rest of this stuff is never discussed. We cannot offend our Chinese trading partner. I mean, my goodness, they own, you know, Walmart has owned 700 factories in China that were cranking out product 24 hours a day just to feed Walmart. It's appalling. Absolutely appalling. You still with me, Jackie?
Yes.
All right.
You know, Chuck did, in December of 2002,
mm-hmm.
Chuck did two evenings on a Walmart expose. It's in our archives.
Good.
At sweetliberty.org.
And I'll tell you what.
Go
read it.
Yeah, well, what he. No, it's actually the audio.
Okay, good.
But what he said, and I really believe this is true, anybody, okay, who listens and hears stuff like this and still goes to Walmart, first he said, if you're crazy. But if you're shopping at Walmart after this, he said, you're a traitor to your country.
I agree with
that. I do too.
Wholeheartedly. I cannot stomach that store. Shortly after moving to this community, it was discovered that Walmart had owned a very large piece of property down by the highway, and that they were planning on putting a brand new 24-hour superstore in. And I couldn't figure out why, because 2.5 miles down the road, they've got one. At two exits
wow.
down the road, they've got one.
Wow.
Well, they've decided that they've outlived their usefulness in that location.
Because they...
And so, so there's going to sit another empty, stinking Walmart store. I don't know. Maybe they'll put something else in there. Maybe Walmart will keep them both open. You know, Walmart will do whatever it takes to get business from anybody
yeah.
at all times. You see, the one thing I learned about Walmart years ago is Walmart may lose. They may go up against the public, and the community may say, no Walmart. But you see, Walmart already owns the property. They're not forced to sell it. They will wait it out until they can buy the proper politicians into office
That's
that will
right.
eventually vote their way. And if people don't understand this about Walmart, I understand, people, that economically, that we are not in a position of strength today. And I realize a lot of you folks feel that you need to go to Walmart in order to survive.
No, that's BS.
But the problem is, it's because everybody continues to go to Walmart that this nation economically is dying.
Jeff, there was a report done by some company. It wasn't a, I'm trying to think, like an organization.
Mm-hmm.
They did a shopping thing. They had, we'll say, 15 items.
Mm-hmm.
They went to Walmart, priced all the items, and went to a whole bunch of other stores, and Walmart was somewhere in the middle
mm-hmm.
With an average price. But what people don't understand, I think, is that what Walmart advertises, you know, low prices every day.
Right.
Well, they'll advertise some items that are really lower than others, but then while people are there, they're picking up other things. They have no idea that they're paying maybe 30% more for. But once Walmart puts all the moms and pops out of business in a particular area, up go the prices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So people never have any reason to shop at Walmart. No justification whatsoever.
Well, I have a big problem with their grocery chain. My stepmother's husband worked with the Fry's
grocery. I think there's a break coming up here.
We got a break coming up?
I hear some music. Am I
yep.
yelling tonight?
No, you're doing fine.
All right.
Go for your break.
Well, yeah, we could have talked together.
Yeah, we could have done.
He has turned the music down some night.
That's all right. Which is good. We'll talk a little bit more about Walmart's grocery store when we come back.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
I'm assuming we're back.
We are back.
That's quick. We'll make a little further comment on Nicholas's message here shortly. I wanted to briefly mention one final thing about Walmart, because I frankly grow weary speaking about it.
I know.
I don't think people really can fully understand. What's interesting is a lot of folks in the chat room have lobbed onto this Walmart conversation. They're really getting into it. NASCAR says Walmart gets mostly Spanish workers. Some don't speak English well at all. They outnumber the black people in the Walmarts. Took jobs away from them. He says, I use the payphones in Walmart sometimes, and that's about it.
Uh-huh.
My stepmother's husband, who would you assume would be my father? My father passed on; she remarried. Worked in the Fry's grocery chain for years in the meat cutting department, and you know, very deeply involved with the union and everything else. And the problems they go through with Walmart. You know, Walmart has their superstores with their 24-hour grocery stores. And, of course, the majority of the fruits and vegetables all come from south of the border.
Yeah.
Those people do not have the same hygienic requirements that we do in working with foods, et cetera.
You're talking about Mexico?
Oh, gee.
They use human feces.
Absolutely.
As their fertilizer.
Yep. And so, you know, you're dealing with buying food that is questionable as to possible disease that's come along with it. Wasn't there about a year and a half, 2 years ago, there was some illness that was being spread around in some restaurant chain up in the Northeast, and they were able to track it back to strawberries that had been purchased at Walmart?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. First time I've done that in a while. Well, anyway, I think that, you know, we've got the basics kind of laid down with some of the economic problems. I mean, we're you know, 2.7 million jobs lost in the last 2.5 years in this country in the manufacturing industry. I don't see any end in sight of the continued loss of jobs. When you've got these corporate CEOs that are getting paid millions of dollars to move these companies offshore, and the taxpayers, the United States taxpayers, are footing the bill, something's horribly wrong here.
Yeah.
So what we face is, and you know, I probably am sitting here on enough material that we could probably go for 2 or 3 hours tonight. I mentioned to you earlier we began speaking about the housing bubble, and I want to touch briefly on that one more time. Housing bubble is creating a big problem. Doesn't matter how it got there, but home prices have been inflated so high in the last couple of years. People have been enticed. And here's the big problem. The inflation of the value of the homes is one thing. But what is criminal is the enticement to the homeowner to get them to go remortgage their house at higher and higher and higher rates and draw more and more money out. They're still getting very favorable interest rates, which is part of the hook.
But they're sucking more
equity out of their home. Yeah. And all of a sudden, when that market collapses, and it is beginning to do so in certain areas of the country, foreclosures are up on homes in certain areas of the country. I know for a fact...
I think foreclosures are up on homes all over the country if we knew the facts, Jeff.
Oh, and, but they're being very carefully hidden. I know I read a story on the air several months ago about a man who was suing Pulte Home Builders up in Las Vegas because they pressured him to close on his home by the 28th of September, or he might, his deposit might be in jeopardy and he might lose the house. Well, he went ahead and hurried up and he closed down the home. 2 weeks later, they dropped the price of that home by nearly a third. Well, obviously, he's got a lawsuit because he now feels he was lied to and deceived.
Yeah, yeah.
All of a sudden, the housing boom in Vegas, while it's still fairly strong, is starting to bring lower and lower dollars. So the new home builders, in order to remain competitive and be able to sell their product, have had to drop their prices. Well, he just figures he got screwed for $116,000.
Wow.
So he's suing. And folks, this is going to be happening more and more. So it still comes down to what can we as individuals do to, I hate to use the term, but protect our wealth. The first thing is, whatever you do, if you're in the market for a home, don't buy it now. Don't buy a new home right now. And I could get into 2 hours of conversation about all the reasons why. Give yourself a year to 2 years. Housing prices are going to drop like a rock in this country. You're going to be able to buy more home for the same money, or you're going to be able to buy the same home for a lot less money. Stop getting into the refinance mechanism. Credit card debt has become so outrageous in this country. That's what's driving the economy. The home mortgage business, the building of new homes, and credit card debt. People have no money. They're whooping out that plastic, whooping out that MasterCard. And they keep getting further and further into debt. It becomes a vicious cycle because now, in order to get out of that debt, look how easy it is to go get a home equity credit line or to refinance the home. And that's what's happening. And what's going to happen is this market begins to crumble. All of a sudden, people are going to find out that their home is no longer worth what they owe on it. Guess what?
That's what we were talking about.
That's what our friends, the bankers, ultimately want to happen.
Yeah.
Because they're going to grab it, they're going to resell it, maybe they'll sell a bundle of them to one of their banking buddies, and that's exactly what happened during the Depression.
And I think a lot of times, without people really reading the fine print, a lot of these mortgages allow the bank to call in the mortgage at any time they want.
Actually, I learned something probably 15 years ago. I knew a guy who at that time was getting prepared to buy a fairly large amount of gold from me. And he literally got a phone call from his bank that morning. And they gave him 30 days. He had to cover his entire mortgage.
See?
30 days.
So he evidently they knew that he was going to invest some of it somehow. They found out he was going to invest some of his extra money.
Possible, but you also have to realize that the time this happened was in the very early 90s when we were seeing the collapse of the SNL industry. You had the whole Charlie Keating situation. That's a marvelous story that I could open up the doors on, but we don't have time tonight. And so a lot of banks at that time, there were still banks being foreclosed on by the Fed back in 91, 92. And that's when this thing happened. And banks were nervous. Savings and loans were nervous. And anybody that was just a little bit flaky, they were going after them. Maybe somebody who had had that payment that was, you know, a couple of weeks late or 30 days late, they decided to put the hammer down on these people because they could no longer afford to have all this bad paper out there. That was their excuse.
Mm-hmm.
But not officially, of course. So these things become problematic. It's an ongoing vicious cycle. The average American does not know how to... Well, number one, the average American no longer has the ability to save money. Our percentage of savings in this country is probably less than 1%. How do you save when you're just trying to get by from day to day, week to week, month to month? It's not an easy thing to do. That's amongst the reasons I've dealt with gold for as many years as I have. It is nothing more, and this is how it should be looked at,
a hedge.
As a private savings account.
Uh-huh.
It shouldn't be looked upon as a, is a Midas Touch get-rich-quick scheme, it should be looked upon as a private savings account. Had a very long discussion before we went on the air tonight with my webmaster, and he has been an avid buyer of gold and silver for years from me, and had been buying it for years before that. In fact, I introduced the guy to his wife, and she'd been my secretary at one time. Uh-huh. And it's so problematic because people have a difficult time understanding gold and silver. They think it's a frivolous expense. They think that they're throwing money away. They're not. They're taking questionably valued paper currency, if that's what you want to call
it. Yeah, but a debt note.
And exactly. And yet what they're doing actually, is they're buying something that actually has greater value than the paper and will always have.
It has intrinsic value, and they're buying it with debt notes.
Well, and here's the kicker, Jackie. I think we talked about this briefly last night. In the last just over 2 years, the dollar's lost 25% of its purchasing power. That is called inflation. Inflation has eroded. Every dollar has lost 25 cents of buying power in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And yet gold, on the other hand, has done exactly the opposite. Gold, on the most basic surface, has gone up about 30% in the same time period.
Yes.
So the gains in the value of gold have exceeded the loss in paper. That's the reasons to do it. The purchase of gold and silver, I look at silver, one of the things you talked about last night before we ended, you wanted to talk a little bit about junk silver. And it's called that. It's a term. It's usually it's old dimes, quarters, and half dollars. You're buying them really for their silver content. And although I list them in the catalog and I make reference to it, I have to be honest. I was on the phone with one of my listeners today. In fact, he's a guy that's in the chat room right now. And we started talking about junk silver and some of the other stuff. And I said, look, why? In fact, he started talking about buying silver dollars. I said, why would you want them? You've got to pay an outrageous amount of money to buy an old Morgan or Peace dollar that is, to me, in so many instances, speculation. Why don't we just buy one-ounce silver rounds? And he said, well, what is it?
And what's a one-ounce silver round?
A one-ounce silver round is something that looks like a coin, but it was never designated as legal tender. It is a pure one-ounce silver round. It's round, just like a coin.
But it doesn't have any imprint on it?
No imprint as far as a dollar denomination. It's not smooth like a washer would be. In fact, last week when I guested this program on Thursday night, we offered Engelhart rounds. Engelhart is probably the premier minter and manufacturer of 1,000-ounce bars, 100-ounce bars, but they did a better job of it than anyone. And some years ago, they began to put out something called the Prospector, the Engelhart Prospector, which is probably the most recognized, privately minted, one-ounce pure silver medallion, let's call it, or round in the world. And they're a far better buy than buying a Morgan or a Peace dollar. You're buying them for their silver content. You're buying them for the value. If you ever had to get into a barter and trade mechanism with Ahmed Packrat down at the local convenience market, he's not going to care if you've got a 1904 Morgan dollar.
Right.
But if you've got a one-ounce silver piece, you can both open up USA Today or the Wall Street Journal right there at his Circle K or 7-Eleven or whatever convenience market you have in your community, and you can both agree this is what an ounce of silver is worth. Fine, we'll go ahead and barter and trade for that. Silver is what you do. It's a workhorse. That's a loaf of bread, gallon of milk type mentality. A lot of people say, well, get the old junk silver, dimes, quarters, half dollars. Jackie, I remember back in 1979 and 80 when silver went to $50 an ounce, there were places in this country you could buy a gallon of gas for 10 cents. Now, gasoline was over $2 a gallon then, but you could buy it for 10 cents if you had an old silver dime.
Is that right?
The problem is a whole generation of people have come and gone since then. I don't think you're going to find that many people owning businesses that will understand the value of an old silver dime.
Right.
But a one-ounce pure silver piece that's marked one-ounce pure silver or 999 fine, etc., that's going to be far more easily understandable and recognizable. And, of course, a lot of us are going to barter and trade amongst ourselves. But gold becomes the savings account. You know, silver weighs a lot. You want to put a $5,000 into silver, you're probably hauling around a 60-pound bag of silver. Well, if you got to get up and run in the middle of the night, you're going to grab your kid or the silver? Me, I'm grabbing the kid. The hell with the silver.
Uh-huh.
But you can carry an immense amount of value and wealth in your pockets if you've got it in gold. And I don't care if we're talking, you know, U.S. certified gold pieces, if we're talking a lot of the international gold pieces that I work with. I think it's well worth having a mix, different sizes, denominations, different countries, different mint marks. Once again, not everybody in this country is going to recognize a $20 St. Gaudens double eagle. You know, it looks too much like the modern day American Liberty. I like having small fractional pieces, Swiss francs, French pieces, old German or Russian or Prussian pieces. And these are a lot of the kind of things that we do show in the catalog. But as we talked about last night, we gave the legal reasons why I believe, and have always known, why I believe we should, any gold piece that was minted prior to 1933 will be exempt from governmental control and confiscation. But you're going to get some characters going to say, ah, they can change the rules, they can change the law. They won't do it, Jackie, and the reason they won't do it is because governments and empires do not do what's not been done before. These very laws, these exemption laws within coin collecting as related to confiscation, they were written for the big boys. They don't figure the average guy in the street's got enough smarts to have a, quote, coin collection.
There you go, yeah.
It's been written for the big boys, and that's why they couldn't rewrite it in the manner they attempted to rewrite it with this phony 15% rule 30 years ago. There's a question. I'm not near a clock. What time are you showing?
It's about 14 minutes, Joe.
Okay. I want to make one comment, and I actually have a very interesting and unique offer I want to extend to the listeners tonight. It's one that I've not had the privilege of doing for probably 6 or 8 months, and it's such a spectacular acquisition that I want to share it with the audience. There's a question that's been asked of me quite often, and part of this has been born out of the fact that there are some competitors who have gone on the air, as we talked about last night, and attempted to trash my approach and my dealings with gold and silver sales. And the question basically is this: with all of the certified U.S. coins being promoted by dealers on the alternative media, why do you, meaning me, continue to offer international gold and silver coins? Jackie, my answer is very simple. I believe in owning U.S. gold coins. I just don't believe in putting all of my eggs in one basket. Coins from Europe, Central, South America, other regions of the world provide us with a very strong financial foundation of our collection, and I use that term very loosely. I'm going to be point blank. It's not important for somebody to know you're a collector. It's important for you to give the appearance of being a collector. That's what exempts you from confiscation. If you called me tonight
instead of a hoarder,
yeah, exactly, because that was expressly forbidden, is
uh-huh.
hoarding. So that means if you called up some dealer today, or maybe 15 years ago, and said, yeah, send me a roll, send me 20 of those MS-63 St. Gaudens, nine chances are, 10 years ago, they all would have been 1924s. Well, you might have gotten in 1927, but guess what? You were a hoarder. There's no attempt to even make it look like you're collecting there. Period.
Mm-hmm.
You are a hoarder, and that, in fact, was expressly forbidden. So that's where we go for this mix and match. And I've spent a lot of times with some other dealers around the country who deal chiefly in the international gold coin markets, and they're all in full agreement. And don't kid yourself, I'm the guy that started the introduction of the international gold stuff on the shortwave many years ago, and it ticked a lot of people off for a lot of years, and they've been trying every way they could to get back at me for it. You know what? People have got to do what they're comfortable with. If they've got a dealer they're happy with, fine. Go do business with them.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Is there a bigger premium for them on the U.S. gold
coin? Oh, no. I'll tell you what. About 4 weeks ago, it was the one night that we started getting into my commercial here on the program.
Oh, yes. And
then we got cut off.
You lost your connection.
And because you and I went back and had a little play it back and everything else. what became interesting is, just to satisfy some people, I did go on and made a very fair offering for some $20 Liberty Gold pieces in a mid-state 62 grade. People could have a choice of getting four coins from the 1890s or four coins from the early 1900s. And there was about a $60 price difference. And no matter which one of those options they would have chosen, they would have come up with under 4 ounces. One of those options was like, I don't know, $2,360, and the other one was $2,420. And it would have come up just under 4 ounces. Well, what became crazy is I was able to offer 16 pieces that had been minted in 1930 from the country of Uruguay. They had never been circulated before. They have a very unusual story behind them we're not going to go into tonight, but the fact of the matter is each one of those little fractional coins actually contained in excess of a quarter ounce. And so 16 coins actually gave people over 4 ounces of gold rather than under, and it cost about $500.
Oh, wow.
Less. So who's zooming who here?
Do you still have that available?
I don't think we've got the Uruguays available right now.
Oh, wow.
No. And
because you were cut off just as you were...
as we were getting into it that night.
Yes.
And those things happen. Those things, unfortunately, do happen. You there?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do this, because we will run out of time here. I do want to share with the audience something. Like I say, it's been a good 7-8 months since I've been able to make this kind of offer openly on the air. One of the coins that's discussed in the catalog are amongst my favorite. They are from the Netherlands, Queen Wilhelmina. And these particular pieces, which I'm trying to find in the catalog.
Me too.
I lose track on dates after a while, and I do apologize to the audience for that. I happen to like the Queen Wilhelminas. They were the last gold coins issued for commerce by the Netherlands, minted between 1911 and 1933. Technically, 1932 was their last year of issue. They're commonly referred to as the Queens. It's called a Dutch 10 guilder. It depicted Queen Wilhelmina as an older matronly ruler. There was also a younger variety of those coins available, but they're not available right now. I happen to like them because they've got tremendous gold content and numismatic value without paying these outrageous premiums for the numismatic aspect. The point is that they're all uncirculated. So we've got coins here that are, you know, 80 and 90 years old, and they've never been placed in circulation. And the King Willems are sometimes available. Rarely are they in uncirculated condition. But I like these because they are the pre-33. They meet and exceed all the requirements of the law as relates to, quote, coin collecting. They are exempt from governmental controls. The fact that they're uncirculated, many of these coins, if I were to take them out and have them graded, I have no doubt they would grade 63 to 65. If
those
they
are
had
the
to
high
be certified,
grade.
They would be a good medium to a good mid-grade.
What is it? The higher grades are...
The higher the number, the better the overall condition is from its original strike. And we probably should have spent some time on that. To make it real simple, coins that grade mint state 60 to 70 are coins that were meant to be circulated but never were.
Oh, okay.
These are just referred to as brilliant uncirculated. They've never gone through certification, although they could be. I could get some of these coins graded. You would pay a much, much greater price for them. So here's what I've done tonight. I'm going to put together a 5-pack of these coins. Each coin weighs just that tiny hair under a fifth of an ounce. It's like 0.1947 of an ounce. That's the gold content in the coin. A complete 5-pack delivered, $479. I'll tell you what. You try to buy a single St. Gaudens gold piece in condition like these, you're going to get about the same weight. You're going to pay a much, much greater amount of money to buy that St. Gaudens or Liberty, anywhere from $50 to $125 higher.
Wow.
In the same kind of condition. Why? If you want the American piece that badly, I'll be glad to provide it. But this is an alternative. It's small, fractional pieces. They're not graded. They're not certified. They're going to come to you. Depending upon the size of your order, they may come in a plastic flip. They may come to you in a tube. because that's only the first part. This is the most you'll pay, $479 for a five-pack of these coins delivered. But if someone's interested in a larger purchase, they want to look at a half a roll, that's 20 coins, $1,869. That's a better deal than what I had on the other pieces 2 weeks ago. $1,869 for 20 coins. We had 19-something 2 weeks ago, and that was for 16 coins.
Uh-huh.
And for those who want to really jump in, who understand the wisdom of this, they can order a full roll of 40 coins for $3,669 delivered. I defy you to try to start talking to any dealer about certified U.S. this, that, and the other thing and be able to find that comparable of a deal for the amount of weight you'll be getting. And so all I can suggest, if you want to take advantage of this, to give me a call after the program tonight. I'll also be around all day tomorrow. And my phone number is 623-327-1778. That's 623-327-1778. And these will be the Queen Wilhelmina packages. For those who are interested in larger purchases, I will custom design and work with them on a specific portfolio. Because you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. Uh-huh. You want to mix and match it as much as you can. And keep in mind, not only is it one of the ways I stay on the radio, you get tremendous advantage with a great deal on gold acquisitions. It also allows me to help keep Jackie on the radio, which is the other end of what we have to do here.
No, we don't have to do that.
I know that. But it's important that this program, not for my benefit, and you know what, frankly, not even for your benefit, because
no,
it isn't your benefit.
No, I don't benefit
other... It's for the
other...
people out there
yeah,
that are
it,
listening.
My benefit is... that it is an avenue that I can share with our listeners.
That's right.
Information I just don't think they'll get someplace else. And it's sort of like a release valve, because without that opportunity or that avenue, I don't know. I mean, all of this information that you have, it's going no place. That could be very frustrating, Jeff.
Very much so. Now, I don't know how late you're going to be up tonight. I received a very, very interesting email today from someone I've not heard of in about 4 or 5 years, and there's several paragraphs in there that I want to share with you.
All right, well, I'll be up. And
You'll get a chuckle out of it.
Okay,
but
and we
ladies and gentlemen, do take advantage of this. If you've been considering buying gold, if you're in the market, if you own gold and you're not sure that you've done the right thing and you want to discuss some trade-outs, I have a gentleman I'm working with right now that is sitting there with about 16 ounces of some higher grade U.S. coins that he bought years ago at a very fair price, and he's now in a position that he wants to sell out and convert it to international. And I give him the proposal today that would allow him to take his 16 ounces of U.S. gold coins, convert it into 67 ounces of international.
Wow.
So I can do that.
That's beautiful. You hear we're out of time.
We're out of time. Jackie, thanks for being with me tonight.
It's
been a funky night.
Yeah, it has.
Give us a holler. 623-327-1778.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support.